Welcome to the Hoosier Ag Today, Friday podcast on the 5th of June, 2026. I'm Andy Eubank, joined by CJ Miller and Greg Allen on News Today. Brought to you by First Farmers Bank and Trust, proudly serving local farms, families, and agribusiness for 140 years. Visit them online at ffbt.com to learn more. Coming up in the news, how the presence of New World screwworm in Texas could impact cattle producers here in Indiana. And we'll detail how June is the start of two opportunities to celebrate Indiana agriculture. Hat Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast includes some moisture heading to the state from the west, and another sell-off Thursday for grains and oilseeds. Angie Setzer checks in with market commentary on the Hat Friday podcast.
At First Farmers, we know that farming takes grit. From unpredictable weather to market fluctuations, our farmers face challenges. Since 1885, we've watched them weather those challenges without fail. That's why we're proud to help power farmers with financial products, services, and expertise built around the seasonal nature of agriculture that lets them continue powering our local communities. Is it time to expand your operation? Visit us at ffbt.com or stop by a local branch to get started. First Farmers Bank and Trust, equal opportunity lender, member FDIC.
For your grandpa, it was all about legacy. A legacy you're now living. He wanted ideas that made dollars and cents. He wanted innovation, but only if it made better yield or saved a little time. He did his best to keep things safe and comfortable. He chose performance over paint color. His loyalty was to faith, family, farm, and friends, and in that order. So while some people might say owning their grandpa's tractor is an insult, we couldn't disagree more. Because the Massey Ferguson 9S is built for everything your grandpa wanted for the farm. Plenty of power, lots of convenience, visibility, and ease of use. Everything you need to build your own legacy, now and into the future. Come see the Massey Ferguson 9S at Plevna Implement in Kokomo, Napanee, Auburn, and Rensselaer. The 9S from Massey Ferguson. It's not just another tractor. It's your grandpa's Massey.
The New World screwworm has breached the U.S. border and important opportunities to celebrate Indiana Ag. This is Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Greg Allen. A flesh-eating livestock parasite has resurfaced in Texas. USDA confirmed Wednesday that New World screwworm was found in a three-week-old calf in South Texas, marking the first U.S. case of the pest since the 1960s. C.J. Miller reports how this could impact cattle producers right here in Indiana.
This is an animal health issue. This is not a food safety issue. So consumers do not have to be concerned about this.
That's Dr. Ron Lemonager, beef extension specialist with Purdue University. He says while a 20-kilometer quarantine zone is active around the impacted site in Texas, local climate shifts mean herds across Indiana and Michigan aren't completely immune during the warmer months.
The fly does not like 40-degree temperatures and below. So that gives us some protection in this part of the country. That doesn't mean to say that we can't get it in the summertime. And the heat has migrated north, and so we don't get as cold as soon as we used to.
He notes the most immediate threat to cattle across the Midwest would come from either interstate animal transport or wildlife movement.
Any warm-blooded animal is susceptible to the infection. If we monitor wounds, okay, anytime we get blood, cows that are calving, for example, navel cords on newborn calves or newborn animals of any kind, those are particularly vulnerable. The animal that does not have any wounds or blood on the surface are probably immune to it. But anytime we've got a wound or blood, those are the animals that are going to be the most vulnerable.
Lemonager adds that as the USDA accelerates its sterile fly release program to collapse the pest population, Midwestern cattle producers should brace for short-term market volatility driven by psychology rather than a genuine concern for direct infection.
Until everybody understands that's not been following this all along, they could react somewhat negatively to this news, but the reality is that it does not affect food safety. And that's a key point from the standpoint of volatility in the marketplace.
As federal officials race to contain the parasite, Lemonager urges Indiana cattle producers to monitor their animals closely and stay on top of any updates that come from the Indiana State Board of Animal Health. I'm C.J. Miller.
June marks the opening of two important opportunities to celebrate Indiana agriculture. The Indiana State Department of Agriculture is now accepting entries for its annual Agriculture Photo Contest through June 30th. According to Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith,
this is a great chance for talented photographers all over the state to submit their photos having to do with anything agriculture, you know, on the farm, agritourism, conservation, all of those things that, you know, embody our agriculture ecosystem here in Indiana.
Winners will be honored during the celebration of agriculture at the Statehouse. At the same time, nominations are being accepted for Indiana's prestigious AgriVision Award. Established in 2007, the award is the highest agricultural honor presented by the state.
It's not just, you know, farming. It could be, the biotechnology. It could be just technological advances. It could be engineering. It could be farming. I mean, it could be everything in between. This is really just encompasses anyone that has anything to do with making Indiana agriculture as great as it can be.
Nominations for the AgriVision Award are open through July 1st, with the winner to be recognized during this year's Celebration of Agriculture by Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith and ISDA Director Don Lamb. Find these stories and more on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Greg Allen.
No two farms are the same. But something every farmer can agree on is that the land is so much more than just a farm. It's their livelihood, their lifestyle, and their legacy. That's something you don't have to explain to a farmer-owned lender. Learn how working with a farmer-owned lender can get you a farm real estate loan designed for your unique operations needs at fcma.com/real estate. Loan subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply. Farm Credit Mid-America is an equal opportunity lender.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. As we take a look at the setup here across the region, I don't have any major changes for you on this Friday. Watching moisture build to the west, it started to build overnight across the upper Midwest. Here this morning, we're watching good showers start to come out of eastern Iowa into northern Illinois and into southern Wisconsin. Why am I mentioning all of this action that's not in Indiana? Because that's where our next round of moisture is going to come from. We see some strong storms crossing Lake Michigan late this afternoon and evening and hitting Michigan proper. I think the southern edge of this moisture is going to be trying to drag through northwest Indiana this afternoon. Have to keep an eye out for a few showers there. And then across the rest of the far northern quarter of the state, probably through the overnight. Now, once we get into tomorrow morning, we do still see some action holding on but sagging southward through the rest of the state. Secondary wave may try and pop up tomorrow afternoon. Is it a lot of moisture? No. I'm kind of dialing back here because I don't think there's strong storms at all in Indiana. Anywhere from a few hundreds to maybe half an inch is what we see, and I'm going to dial coverage back to about 60% of this moisture for overnight tonight through tomorrow. We'll take a break on Sunday. Some clouds around, but no new significant moisture. And then Monday afternoon, we start to see some action fill in over western Indiana, then going through Tuesday and into Wednesday, on again, off again, scattered showers. We take a break for next Thursday and Friday. I think overall next week, that Monday through Wednesday rain can be anywhere from a tenth to three quarters of an inch with coverage around 80% of the state. Taking a break the last part of the week, and then our next rounds of moisture try to develop over the weekend, but they're not exceptionally solid, especially Saturday the 13th. I think we have better chances Sunday the 14th of some on again, off again scattered showers before the week of the 15th gives us several rounds of moisture coming through. At this point, not overly heavy rain anywhere in our forecast, but we're seeing chances crop up every couple of days. I call it timely rain, but I'm also now seeing enough holes in here that I'm not going to promise rain to everyone out of this timely rain pattern. Yep, that's right. Some of you are going to continue to tell me, hey, Ryan, I need a rain, even though there's rain in the forecast somewhere in the Hoosier State all the way through the next couple of weeks. So it's going to be an interesting pattern. We'll really sort out quickly the haves versus the have-nots, the lucky from the unlucky when it comes to precipitation. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Planting season is here, and Beacon Credit Union is proud to stand beside the farmers who make it all happen. We're here to help with flexible lines of credit, equipment financing, and real estate loans built for your operation. At Beacon, it's ag people serving ag people, committed to your success in every season. Start at beaconcu.org. Insured by ASI, not federally insured EHO lender.
A sell-off in corn, beans, and wheat? Beans lead the way lower. This is Hoosier Ag Today. It's the Thursday Farm Market Review. I'm Andy Eubank. Final numbers coming up. We'll begin, though, with commentary from Angie Setzer, Consus Ag Consulting. I spoke with her at the end of the session. Markets sold off, and that was the case in the corn and wheat markets. And the downside leader, Angie, on Thursday, soybean futures over 30 cents lower as we look at about $4 lower crude oil and a very interesting dynamic going on in the cattle market, which we will talk about later. But first, the pressure on the grains continues. It seemed to intensify, though, Thursday. Why?
Yeah, late in the day on Tuesday, which spilled over into yesterday, that was part of what we had seen on the Wednesday's trade lower. And, of course, again, today it kind of began to recirculate, and there's a lot more in the way of talk about it. We did see the administration come out, Representative Greer there, or Trade Ambassador Greer, I think it is, come out and basically announced that an investigation into forced labor had found that several dozens of countries that we do business with, including our top trade partners, were, you know, responsible for participating in some of these forced labor things that the administration says needs to be punished via tariff. And so basically, we just kind of saw a reopening of the tariff story. Of course, included in that was China. There were several that are going to get a 10% tariff potentially, and a handful that will get 12. And China is one of them, Japan, China, and India. And so now, of course, the question is at hand as to how that affects the trade deal that we have seen. China did come out yesterday or last night and basically say, we do not participate in forced labor. We don't know where they are getting this. And that really could potentially cause a rift, and honestly, obviously, makes traders kind of question whether we'll get the purchases and the trade increase that folks have been talking about, or at least looking forward to.
We also do seem to have some seasonal liquidation as the corn and soybean crops really overall, not quite as well as expected, but off to a good start. That continues to apply pressure during the course of this week.
Oh, for sure. We've got what I would call a bearish Yahtzee. I don't know if I could count the last time it felt like we had this much of a sort of fundamental shift as quickly as we've seen. I don't think it potentially, or I don't think it lasts as long as the last few that we've seen or the last couple of years have been. But we definitely have seen, you know, you had discovering that the funds were as long as what they were in the middle of May to see the weather kind of transition back to more in the way of moisture here. And then, of course, to have the handful of other things that we've seen with the New World screwworm, the potential that we see the tariffs placed back on trade and trade with China. It's definitely been a rough week.
New World screwworm, you mentioned that. It was confirmed that there is a case in Texas, and that was confirmed on Wednesday night late. The expectation, I'm sure, for many was that we would see some very volatile cattle markets, and indeed we did. And I'm going to call it an 18-cent range of trade in feeder cattle, going limit up at the end after sharply lower at the open. Same in live cattle, sharply lower at the open and then sharply higher at the end. Can you explain that volatility?
Yeah, I mean, part of it obviously is we'd been under pressure and we had seen the sell-off, the liquidation, you know, as we've come into this news. Carl, it was great to kind of explain it a little bit in the sense of the analogy that he used was a great picture. It was like a, you know, having a steamroller come at you. We knew that the New World screwworm was making its way north. You know, I think he had said 10 days ago or so it was 50 miles and then it was 25 miles and it was just a matter of time before we knew we got here. So partly I think there was a little bit of a selling the rumor and then turn around and buy the fact. Of course, there is an idea there or a belief that we will see a substantial reduction in supply. You know, right now there are a lot of I have to be careful with my words because I don't want to say exaggerated claims necessarily because we don't know. But there are a lot of catastrophic sort of conversations being had about what this will mean for the cattle herd. And so I think that's a part of it is folks are kind of looking at this as, if the supply shrinks, then the price has to go higher. And so the belief is or the worry is with a lot of the cattle in the South, especially this tends to hit your newborn cattle. Like the one case that was found was in the umbilical cord of, I think, a 2-day-old calf. And so that, I think, is the catalyst behind a lot of this, is we could continue to see the border remain closed and then, of course, see a potential reduction in available supply if we were to see this sort of take off and get a foothold. I don't think we see that happen. I think the USDA is going to have relatively decent control over it. We have eradicated the situation in the past, and some of these other things. But I just right now hysteria dominates. And so the more steady, the more important view or the larger view today is that we could see the herd get smaller.
And that is analyst Angie Setzer of Consus Ag Consulting. Get them at 989-506-1587. Final numbers now from Thursday trade. And by the way, export sales out Thursday, not very impressive and didn't do the markets any good. 7 cents lower. July corn, 424.5. September, 432.75, down 7.5. And 451.75, Dease corn, it lost 8 cents on the day. 24.5 lower. July beans, 1129.5. August, 1132.5. And Novi, 1141.5. Both the August and November contracts losing 25.75. Down 1.5 on both July and September wheat. July settles at 581.75. In the cattle market, nearly $11 higher. That was the limit up in the feeder cattle market across the board. June live cattle, 249.17, a gain of 255. June lean hogs, 95.30, down 75. Hear more on that cattle market discussion with Angie Setzer on the Hoosier Ag Today Friday morning daily podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ian DeEubank, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.